Well, first, you might have bought their computers. Then you might have bought their portable music player. And before you know it, you were signing up to their mobiles and maybe even a tablet or two. Well, now tech giant Apple are hoping to move into your small, onto your small screen and even into your wallet, announcing a whole bunch of new services at an industry showcase overnight. Amongst the announcement was a new television subscription service, a news subscription service, and even, wait for it, a credit card. So why is the tech giant going in this direction? See, Steve Sammartino is a futurist and he joins me this evening. Steve, good evening to you.
How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. So is this new direction from Apple, did it come as a surprise to the tech industry overnight?
No, absolutely not. In fact, it's been touted almost for years that Apple would get into more of a services area, both the credit card and Apple banking and also the TV streaming was not a surprise to the tech industry. And in fact, many had thought that it might happen a couple of years earlier than it did.
So why is it a logical step for a tech giant, which I suppose for this point has been dealing mainly in mobiles and music and computers?
Yeah, there's a real move towards tech companies becoming services companies and service oriented. The one thing that we need to remember is that televisions are no longer televisions. They're basically computers in our lounge room. And what we have now is this battle for the lounge room, where once you get someone into your ecosystem, then there's more revenue to be had. And so now what we see with the streaming and the television is this battle royale with tech giants from Google to Netflix to Amazon and now including Apple to really be the fulcrum device inside people's lounge room where there's a lot of money to be held.
And I suppose, though, this announcement comes at a time when we hear that sales of Apple's mobiles are slipping, and I suppose given the wide amount of choice out there, and we know that the Android operating system has certainly given the iPhone a run for its money. So how is it that a tech giant like Apple's going to go in an already crowded marketplace, given that, well, at the moment there are plenty of streaming services and plenty of credit card services out there? Can Apple really break into a market that's already seems very saturated?
Yeah, it does seem saturated, but I think Apple are going to walk right into it a lot easier than most people think. What we need to remember is that Apple already have a deep relationship with most consumers. In Australia, they have 45% of all handsets. That's 8.6 million iPhones out there. They have 1.4 billion iOS users around the world. And this is not just people plugging into a website like they do with Facebook. This is people laying out thousands of dollars to be associated with this. And so I think that they're well positioned. Remember, they already have their Apple TV device from which people hire and rent movies to stream. So it's a really logical step. And here's the kicker. Apple's got $283 billion in the bank at their disposal to make amazing content. They've signed on people the likes of Oprah, arguably the world's biggest TV star in history, to make documentaries. So they have the wherewithal to make content which can compete with Hollywood and any of the other big companies out there. So I think they're going to make a dent and it's going to come in real big and real quick.
Well, it's interesting, as you mentioned there, Oprah is one that they've already signed on, and certainly there seemed to be no lack of star power behind the launch in California overnight. I'm pretty sure it was like an A-list of celebrities who showed up to support it. So is that, I suppose, a positive sign when you've already got the stars behind your service before it's even launched or before even people know what it looks like, even given it was sort of just a logo overnight?
Yeah, that's right. And I think that this is what people buy into. So people buy into stories and stars that they already know. And so that celebrity culture, as we know, digital environment has really only ensconced that further. So the fact that they've got the star power, they've said that they're going to invest $2 billion in original content, but I can't help but think that they'll match or even go beyond the $12 billion a year that Netflix is spending on original content. So that star power for me, people like Spielberg and so on getting behind it, says that this is the real deal. And certainly that's a very quick way to get attention, because we need to remember people watch the shows based on the stars that they already like. And so it's pretty easy to sign up for a month at $10 or $15 to watch the equivalent of one movie. It's not a huge outlay, and it's a low-risk outlay to get people into the ecosystem. So those stars will really be the beachhead that gets people into the service. And then if the service is good and it's got a breadth of quality, then they're likely to stay. I mean, the interesting question is, how many things do we want to be signed up to? Netflix, Amazon, I mean, there's only so many that you'll sign up with. So it does feel as though this oligopoly that's emerging for the TV, people pretty much choose a brand and stay with it because it becomes uneconomic to have, you know, Foxtel, Netflix, Prime and all of those signed up at once on your TV.
I do have to say, as someone who's only subscribed to one subscription service, I am thinking, would think really hard before I ever sign up to a second, given that, for the most part, I'm just happy with the one, and I kind of like being frugal with my money. Now, I found it interesting that they're getting into the credit card market. We already know Apple have got their Apple Pay on most of their devices, which are, of course, are linked to your bank account, depending on what bank that you are with. But it seems interesting. It's different with this credit card, though. What's happening there?
Yeah, so this is part of the move to the phone as wallet. I mean, there's really only two pieces left for the phone to become a wallet, and that is the cash and the credit cards, and the other one is the driver's license. Once we have those, then the wallet becomes a redundant device. Look, I think it's a very interesting move because what they've done is they've changed the format of a credit card. Their credit card doesn't have any numbers. It doesn't have a CVV number. It doesn't have an expiration date or even a signature required. I think that it's going to have a real significant security upside for consumers in terms of their credit card being misused. Numbers are the number one way that credit card fraud occurs. So I think that their model is a really good one. And for example, instead of having a frequent flyer system, they're going to do cashback of 2% on all purchases and 3% on Apple purchases, no annual fees, no late fees. So it's a real shift and a consumer-centric shift towards the finance area. I mean, I'd be really nervous if I was a bank, and even Visa, who are at the back end of this, I'd be really nervous at Visa because I can't help but think they're going to learn the craft and the art via partnering with Visa until they don't need them. So certainly they've got the funds to do it. I mean, Apple have more cash in the bank that is higher than the valuation, the market capitalization of all but three banks in the world. So they have the wherewithal to do it. They have the consumer connection to do it. And I think it's going to be a real shift where the credit card dematerializes and goes away, and basically it's going to be something that lives inside our phones as a piece of technology.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but this credit card for the time being is only going to be available in America when it does come out, because it's only through, I think, one of the big banks there.
Yeah, that's right. I think it'll be only in America to start. They've done that before historically with launches. That was also the case with Apple Pay before it arrived in Australia. And I think it's a foray where they'll extend both the markets and the way that you can use it in various areas, because you'll wave your phone in the same way you do with Apple Pay to access the credit card. But I can't help but think that that'll go across their Mac devices where you purchase online via your MacBook. And I also think that it'll be a way to interact with the televisions now that they're streaming. So one of the things that's really interesting here is how do you put together the Apple TV and the new credit card, because all of a sudden you may be able to purchase things you see on the television show. That's a really interesting move that I think we'll probably see in a year or two, that those two things overlap.
Wow, when the shopping channel actually becomes more than just having to phone up and give you credit card details over the phone. Well, interesting, and I'm sort of trying to think back to what has been happening with Apple Pay, and I have to say I've only really been following this on the periphery, but correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't there a big concern when Apple Pay was coming out because they wanted access to the FPOS technology, which I understand for the most part is controlled by the big four banks because they were the ones to actually deliver it to retailers, and they were the ones who actually were pushing back when Apple first wanted to do Apple Pay, saying, no, you can't have access to our technology because we've put investment behind it and you haven't.
Yeah, there was a court case, in fact, associated with that within Australia. FPOS is owned by the big banks in Australia. It's a consortium. And fair to say, it is their technology and it is their devices. And so that's not full open source. Apple ended up doing a deal with ANZ and one other bank in Australia. But there has been some concerns about having access. And the FPOS ownership, the bank said, well, we're not giving you access to that, because also Apple said you can't have access to our near-field communication devices on our phone to create your own virtual version of your credit card. So there's a little bit of a war going on here in terms of the hardware and what we call interoperability. And I actually think this is one of the things that our government and governments around the world need to get better at. What we need to do with tech infrastructure is say, we have one set of tech infrastructure where we can all plug in, similar to having one set of electricity plugs in Australia. So anyone can make electrical components or hardware or toasters and so on, and it all plugs in and it all works. At the moment, there's a battle with people having access or not having access to their hardware, and that creates makes it hard for consumers and reduces competition. So, yeah, that's a challenge.
So how much do you think this will delay Apple bringing their credit card to Australia, if indeed there is, given the battle there was over FPOS, if a similar battle erupts with the Apple credit card and wanting access to Australian systems?
Well, now that we've already got Apple Pay in the Australian marketplace via a couple of banks, I think that this will come in pretty quick. And I also think that at some point, they will just demarcate what the banks do and build their own form of hardware and put that into stores if they need to. So I think that this is one of those things, if they don't participate, sometimes the incumbent will get eaten up by a new technology that goes around it. So it really becomes very interesting in terms of banking. And historically, we've always seen this, when companies become big and powerful, like General Motors, like General Electric, they usually end up in some sort of financial services. And, the power of these tech giants is inordinate. You know, we're talking, the top five or six tech companies now in the world have a market capitalization of over $3 trillion. You know, we've got three companies petering around that, or four companies around that $1 trillion mark. And it's really interesting, because what's happening is a lot of Australia's powerful companies, like our retailers and our banks and so on, are actually being demarcated by international technology firms. And it's fair to say that Australia needs to have a think about our economic infrastructure here, because what may end up happening is a lot of our powerful companies, especially our banks, which are four pillars of our economic society, could end up, having a bit of a problem. We might lose some of that financial control within our own marketplace for Australian consumers.
The voice you're hearing is that of Steve Sammartino. He's a futurist, talking tonight about Apple's announcement, well, overnight, essentially, a TV streaming service, a new subscription service, and a credit card as well. But, Steve, I want to actually talk to you about something else that took my interest over the last week, and this is Google deciding to come up with their own form of gaming service called Google Stadia. What is this?
Yeah, well, gaming's a huge industry, and it always seems like that flunky little thing. I mean, often our mind goes back to arcades and Pac-Man and consoles like the Sony PlayStation and so on, and Nintendo's, and we think it's kind of this sideshow. But gaming is bigger than Hollywood. It's a bigger industry than Hollywood.
$7 billion in Australia, I think, like that.
It's huge, right? And consoles in Australia are a large majority of that. Now, here's what's happening. The idea that the information used to be stored on the console is now going to the cloud. Remember, we used to store all our information, our photos, on our computer and our desktop. Well, now that's all being stored in the cloud, and it turns out that our gaming devices and the software that runs it will also be stored in the cloud. So what Google have done is, instead of you going out and having to buy a console to play games, they're saying, hey, sign up here and you can just plug in and play our games through the cloud. You don't need to buy a new console, every number of years. And Apple doing the same thing now too, because they also announced Apple Arcade overnight. So there's a really big shift from these technology companies to move into gaming. It's a huge industry. And the overriding idea with all of these things is they want people to live in their ecosystem. Because once you're getting, as you know, the switching costs are kind of high. If you've got an Apple phone, to go to an Android, it's a little bit difficult because all your photos are in this one system. And the more they can get you into their system, the more you become a repeat customer over time. So what we're seeing is this, we call it the dematerialization. That's a bit of a freaky word, but what it means is things that used to be physical, like a hardware device, are becoming software, and they get stored in the cloud. So that's what this is part of. It's part of that process. Just like many things that used to be physical and now live inside our phone, that's going to be the same with gaming consoles.
It'll be interesting to see where the future goes when it comes to machinery in our homes. Maybe everything that we thought we could have a machine for is all going to suddenly live in the cloud. Steve Sammartino, thanks for your time this evening.
It's an absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Steve Sammartino, he's a futurist, talking to me about a few of the big projects that, Google and Apple are working on, with Apple launching its showcase overnight over a whole bunch of different services that they're getting into. Did you check out the announcement overnight? Or maybe you caught up with the news today. If so, feel free to share your thoughts on it with me this evening.